Welcome to KABU and the Old Mole Variety Hour. Emmeline Friedman.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, you're a social theorist and author and a psychotherapist, and you've been on the show before to talk about crypto and some of the technologies underlying this digital currency. The jury trial of Sam Bankman-Fried over the past month has rocked the world of crypto with what some describe as the biggest financial fraud case in history. Bankman-Fried was charged with 7 counts of wire fraud and conspiracy to launder money for his role in the multi-billion dollar collapse of FTX in 2022 and pleaded not guilty. On November 2nd, and after a short period of deliberations, the jury found him guilty of 7 counts of fraud and conspiracy. He could spend the rest of his life in jail. Well, Emmeline Friedman, there are different ways of looking at this case from a social psychological perspective. How do you make sense of the dramatic rise and fall of Bankman-Fried?
Yeah, you know, the way that I look at the rise and fall of Bankman-Fried is, of course, through the lens of the particular stage of finance capitalism in which we find ourselves. And I very much think that both his rise and his fall are really rather symptomatic of this current moment in what some even describe as kind of the withering end stages of capitalism, in this interregnum where, you know, it's not really a prime time for capitalism, but we also don't know what's coming next.
And of course, America has a rich history of financial fraudsters with their fates riding the wild currents of capitalist crises, market fevers, and boom-bust cycles. Some of these are related to the rise of neoliberalism and the logic and expansion of markets throughout the late 20th century. How is this, the fate of Bankman-Fried and his troubles, related to this phase of finance capitalism?
Yeah, so I mean, we can talk about Bankman-Fried as a crypto entrepreneur and how he got his start. And maybe we should begin there. But also, you know, the market appetite for what Bankman-Fried was serving up, I think, also deserves some mention in this regard.
And I think just to set the stage for that, of course, he was described as a mad genius, math nerd who got in over his head. People loved him and his persona that he cultivated as too busy and serious to worry about things like what he wore or his hair. A lot of his style and brand were taken up in the critique of him and in the trial. But you're saying there he had an audience that nurtured his arrogance, perhaps.
Yeah. You know, in reflecting on the trial, like what occurs to me as someone who works in the realm of peer-to-peer technologies, distributed and crypto technologies, what comes up to me is really what it says about the consumer appetite for taking huge risks, like extremely risky bets. And the way that Bankman-Fried was able to build up FTX and earn such a major boatload of money because there is consumer appetite for, you know, taking these highly leveraged bets, basically, on the coming to fruition of new technologies. And I think that, you know, you mentioned neoliberalism before. I think that in this kind of every man for himself attitude of, you know, radical flexibility and the need to kind of combine hard work with totally unrealistic optimism, that creating a market for taking these sort of leveraged bets is going to have the appeal that Bankman-Fried's industry is showing us.
Yeah, and I noticed some of the ads by famous actors and basketball players would describe FTX as a place to put your money safely in crypto without having to understand what it's about, so that it spared you putting your money in this exchange from untangling the mystifying world of crypto. Was that also part of the problem of FTX and how he was able to pull, I guess, $8 billion out of that fund to use for his own purposes?
Yeah, so remember that FTX and Alameda Research, the associated entity that really came under fire during the trial, both of those businesses came up when Bankman-Fried decided to take advantage of an arbitrage opportunity. He saw that you could buy Bitcoin cheaply in the US and sell it for a huge markup in Japan.
That was part of his so-called brilliance, right?
Yeah, the brilliance there was spotting this international arbitrage opportunity. So basically, he was able to take a financial savvy that he had gained through, traditional Wall Street, and parlay it into a kind of a pioneering position in the big money game of crypto exchanges, which does exactly as you're describing. Not only does it kind of sell safety in crypto markets in this kind of egregious and fallacious at face value anyway, but also, of course, what he was accused of was kind of being himself the sort of consumer that he was building for by using customer deposits and parlaying them into a bunch of weird, illiquid moonshot technology investments.
The prosecutor used this phrase when he in his summary arguments at the end of the trial, describing him as a scammer and a liar who built a pyramid of deceit. And of course, that uses the term pyramid, like a pyramid scheme, which could describe more clearly the Madoff situation. And he too rose and fell during the financial crisis of 2008, that had made reckless bets on mortgage-backed securities collapse, and investors scrambled to pull money out of the stock market. And a similar thing here, where people started questioning the good news and the happy talk of Bankman-Fried and started to make withdrawals. Do you see this as a similar kind of pyramid scheme that Bernie Madoff was pursuing, or it's different in a certain way?
I think it's really only different aesthetically, right? Like I'm thinking of what you said about, how Bankman-Fried also embodies, and let's talk about the kind of culture that he's coming out of. He really embodies this kind of casual, laissez-faire, really the kind of Silicon Valley tech genius that I think we Some of us love to love, some of us love to hate, but he really embodies this sort of like innocence and naivete of Silicon Valley tech capitalism, but really had the savvy and in fact the math genius of a Wall Street trader, such that he was able to undergird the Ponzi scheme that he was knowingly operating. There are great interviews actually from, the heyday of crypto 2018, 2019 of Bankman-Fried on Bloomberg, talking about crypto yield farming as really describing it in broad daylight as a Ponzi scheme. And so I think that there's this funny way that the Silicon Valley culture of wearing shorts and a t-shirt and playing video games during interviews with policymakers, I think it combines in a funny way with the sort of big money Ponzi schemes that someone like Madoff is capable of, and kind of creates the figure who just got sentenced on 7 counts of fraud.
Yeah, Madoff was also a kind of genius of finance and leader in his industry. In Wall Street, he was chairman of his investment firm and served as the head of the NASDAQ stock exchange and developed innovative strategies in the field of markets. And I think that's part of the drama and a kind of identity crisis, I guess, that those who believe in the the arc of history moving toward markets, that these were very idealized figures. And so the fall was particularly dramatic. And how do then also weigh what is their genius? Is it all a charade? Was there anything Bankman-Fried was doing that would warrant the idealization or admiration that he clearly generated?
I sincerely believe that he was trying to create an increasingly more frictionless global financial system. I think that he participated and again truly believed in this sort of dream of decentralization whereby capital flows as freely as air, basically.
Isn't that a principle of neoliberalism?
Oh, in every way, certainly. Yeah, and ultimately, you can see how this sort of thinking specifically benefits folks like Bankman-Fried, who know exactly the sorts of international arbitrage opportunities. Like in a way, I think with crypto, he wanted to solve some of his own problems in terms of running into delays, with wires, for example, things like that. But he also believed, and this is it's interesting to think about the culture he's coming out of too in building this business, because he also subscribed to effective altruism,
Yeah,
right?
let's talk about that and how much that was part of how he raised money, right? I mean, all the way back to JP Morgan, the world of finance capitalism and the titans of capitalism have built their justification for concentration of wealth on their philanthropy. And JP Morgan, funded a lot of museums and early 20th century institutions that had actually something solid to them. But it also, of course, is part of how all of that wealth and concentration of wealth gets justified through philanthropy. And it was apparently a big part of how he appealed to investors was through this philosophy of effective altruism. So can you explain that a bit and the principles behind that?
Yeah. So in essence, with the JP Morgan comparison, there's nothing new under the sun in the sense that, the justification for his unbelievable earnings and indeed for building a whole crypto empire, is that the plan is to give that all away. And I actually don't think we can, in a sense, the justification has gotten both thicker and thinner. Thicker in the sense that the way that this all started for Bankman-Fried, he was getting a degree in physics from MIT when he met William McCaskill, who's the kind of leader of this effective altruism movement.
They were
McCaskill
a group of
told
Oxford philosophers, right?
precisely.
Sounds
This
like
was
a much better direction than JP Morgan.
Right. Get the Oxford philosophers on your side, right? And in this fated meeting, McCaskill told Bankman-Fried about this revolutionary idea, right, about earning to give. And he told Bankman-Fried flat out that someone with his mathematical talents should pursue a high-paying Wall Street job and donate all of his earnings to charity. And not only charity, though, right? Like, effective altruism has an extremely heavy-handed way of looking at this. As psychologists, maybe we can see it's kind of more and more compensatory in an era of ever greater wealth inequality. But the ideology of effective altruism is really one that values extremes. So the idea being that if all lives are equally valuable, then we should save trillions of potential lives in the future than the billions of lives on the planet today. So, that's one example from effective altruism about how this justification of philanthropism can kind of run completely rampant and justify like any technology development that makes big promises about saving lives in the future, rather than trying to solve like the smaller, messier, more immediate problems that that we're surely facing today.
Yeah, and it seems like there were, as I understand it, there are kind of two legs to this walk through their world. One is the appeal to not be burdened by the boards and the regulations and processes of nonprofits and government programs for the poor or social welfare, that these smart guys know how to do it directly.
It's
And
much more heroic, right, than
that's
working with the
right.
government.
Yeah, and also not be burdened by regulation. Just make as much money as you can and then dispense it to what you deem worthwhile in responding to human needs. Of course, the arrogance of that is that they are very removed from the daily struggle of people in the context of social welfare programs or social programs or nonprofits, which have, of course, their own limits and forms of corruption. But this idea that you could ride above it all, some smart guys in the room can figure all this stuff out on their own, was also then exposed by the second leg of this journey through that world, which was Bankman-Fried and many of the other super uber wealthy investors who adopted this philosophy were using a lot of that money for yachts and planes and mansions. And he was not the monk that he presented himself as. And I think
Yeah.
that was exposed as part of the hypocrisy around his whole act.
Absolutely. I mean, this ultimately, those in the effective altruism crowd, we're talking not just Sam Bankman-Fried, but also Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, Vitalik Buterin, some of the most wealthy white men in this world, right? Are very opportunistically sort of using this philosophy, which, it should be noted, does not even require that you give your wealth away in your lifetime, but potentially in your will, right? So it kind of opens the door to be able to, do everything that one would expect of business as usual capitalism, indefinitely rolling your earnings into building up your empire. And then maybe something happens down the line in your will. But it just goes to show, like earlier this year, Sam Bankman-Fried donated less to charity than his firm spent on rights to name the Miami Heat's arena. So this was $90 million, right? And of course that spend is justified on the basis that, well, I'm still alive, and so I'm still
Making
building
as
up
much
my
money as I can.
empire, yeah, for future, just kind of shoving off, same way as he did with, risk in leveraging customer funds, just kind of delaying to this indefinite future.
Well, before we close, Emmeline, I have to ask you about Elizabeth Holmes. We've been talking about the profiles and corruption in the history of capitalist geniuses who were exposed in their fraudulence. But she had a similar entrepreneurial scheme. She, of course, didn't feel she could perform to investors in sloppy clothes and cargo pants. She had a very different brand. But she also was someone who, appealed to investors, and like Bankman-Fried, her defense at the end was that she thought it hadn't been given a good enough chance, that she could have turned things around if only the wind at her sails had been less ferocious. They both had a similar defense at the end of their trials, that they had a good idea. But the forces against them were driven by the market, and they could have turned things around given enough time. What's your take on that that final appeal they both offered. And of course, how she, as one of the few women entrepreneurs who's convicted of fraud, now she's got a 9-year sentence. How does she fit that mold?
Yeah, at the end of the day, when both of these entrepreneurs are coming with their hats in their hands to the juries, they're going to appeal to the dream that is kind of forced upon all of us, right? Like they're going to paint themselves as someone who tried their best, but ultimately, like the rest of us, are kind of just enslaved to market forces that are beyond our control. And so I think it's telling the sort of gender differences between them. Not only did it take Elizabeth Holmes' jury much longer to come to an opinion, she also, curated her appearance and kind of gained her legitimacy through different cultural tropes. But I think it's right to look at this sort of great equalization that they kind of paint this general portrait of neoliberal subjectivity in their moments of truth, which is that I've tried to be adaptive and optimistic, and I've worked really damn hard, but ultimately here we are all quivering in the face of Mr. Market, right?
Well, I must say I agree with the jury verdict here. And although I do feel sad for Sam Bankman-Fried's parents, who are of course implicated in all of this in various ways, but he's a product of forces not entirely of his own making.
I agree. I echo your sentiments about his family. I think a lot of Democrats are wondering, like, okay, what about all of his campaign contributions? Like, will his political donations have to be returned too?
In one interview, he said he gave as much to Republicans as Democrats, but had to do it as dark money because it wasn't part of his brand.
Right. Well, of course, his mother is the one with the Democratic donor network. So I'm sure, it involved him kind of sidestepping some family norms too in order to push through the sorts of crypto regulation that he wanted to see, right? Which, of course, is going to be spearheaded by the GOP.
Right. There is a denouement here, but the dramas will continue. He will not probably be the last of the fraudsters in finance that we see in our economy.
Yeah, I sure hope it sends a message, I sure hope it sends a message that the sort of flippant attitude that he had, I mean, he really curated this image. This was something that came out from Caroline Ellison, his ex-girlfriend and business partner, that he really curated this image of being nonchalant and kind of ludic and playful and nary a care. And I think that, maybe if this has an effect on the tech world, I hope that it is, to at least act as if you plan on being responsible with customer funds and things like that. And just maybe from having to act as if, it actually does create a little bit more prudence.
Sobering indeed.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much, Emmeline Friedman, for being with me today to talk about the rise and fall and trial of Sam Bankman-Fried.
Thanks for having me, Dan.